Welcome to the Healthy Skin Show with Jennifer Fugo, where we're flipping everything you've been told about your chronic skin issues upside down and connecting you with alternative solutions your dermatologist never told you about.
Welcome back to episode number 189 of the Healthy Skin Show. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about histamine and kids. And this is a big topic that we haven't really touched on before because I talk a lot about histamine issues in adults, but I feel like kids are not really my wheelhouse since I don't work with them. So I feel really lucky that we have a great guest today who can speak to this from her medical practice and what it's been like working with kids that have this histamine overload picture. My guest is Dr. Sheila Kilbane. She is a board-certified pediatrician who trained with Dr. Andrew Weil in integrative medicine. She works with families to find the root cause of illnesses and uses natural and nutritional therapies whenever possible. Her mission is to transform pediatric healthcare globally in order to get 1 million kids off of meds they may not actually need. Dr. Kilbane sees patients at her clinic in Charlotte, North Carolina, and helps people all over the world through her online educational courses. She's also the author of the book called Healthy Kids, Happy Moms, a step-by-step guide to improving many common childhood illnesses. Since our conversation was packed full of information, I figured let's just dive in. Thank you so much, Dr. Kilbane, for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here.
I know you're back. And one of the reasons I love having you is because you work directly with children. And it's not a common thing. There's at least in the skin realm, as far as being more of a functional practitioner, most people work with adults. And so today, because we've already kind of talked about some of the basis for rashes in kids before in your previous episode, I wanted to focus on histamine stuff with children, because that can be one area where parents might not fully understand what's happening. And well, histamines can be kind of excitatory. They can cause, we tend to think of histamine in conjunction with allergies, but they can also cause rashes. So in children, how would an issue with histamines show up? And I guess for the sake of this conversation, how would you define or describe histamines to your patients?
Yeah, so histamines, we always think of histamines as causing runny nose, congestion. So it's an inflammatory compound in the body that can be triggered by allergies, environmental allergies, whether it's pollen or dust mites, that sort of thing. But histamines, they can create a wide variety of symptoms. So one of the, we always talk about the regular allergy type symptoms, but then I also say, do you notice your child, if they have a really strong emotion, do they get red cheeks, red ears? Do you notice the skin rashes? And that can be a vasodilation, which means the blood vessels, they dilate. And that is what can contribute to that rashiness and that redness. It can also be, it can cause bloating. It can cause loose stools. But the other thing is histamine also can act as an excitatory neurotransmitter. So when I have these kids, when they have these big mood swings, and they have a lot of gut issues, I always talk to the parents and I say, this could be part of what's triggering those mood swings or the behavior meltdowns. And it's always when, it's the times when the parents will say the behavior looks, it just seems like they can't help it, and they're having these meltdowns and they're not, they're not necessarily doing it intentionally to drive us crazy, but that can all be tied in. So it goes anywhere from skin issues, skin itching, redness, to gut issues, bloating, gassiness, loose stools, to congestion, cough, watery, itchy eyes, wheezing, to then, behavior issues.
So this can look like asthma. It could look like, obviously, eczema to some degree. Yeah. It can look like Oh my goodness. Like almost like an ADHD or ADD type situation of a kid that has difficulty focusing, and a child that might be very defiant even and having outbursts and being incredibly difficult.
Yes. Yes. And it's always because I get calls from other practitioners for whether it's a child with eczema. So it can be a recurrent rash. It could be this recurrent asthma. And when they're not responding to the normal treatments, you know, and whether it's conventional treatments and if you're combining functional medicine and nutritional treatments, these are the kids that sometimes they might be off gluten, they might be off dairy, you know, doing all the perfect things, but they're still getting these flare-ups. That's where I start to look under the hood and go, okay, do they have excess histamine? Because we do need histamine to a certain extent, right? It helps digestion of our food, absorption. So it is a needed chemical mediator, but when there's too much of it, we don't see the improvements that normally we would be seeing. If histamine were part of the picture.
And can I ask you a question? When you mentioned like the flushed red ears and starting to get flushing through the face, for somebody listening to this, is this something that stays all the time or something that you would notice after an exposure to something, like say you go outside or you eat something? So is it something that comes on and then dissipates or it stays all the time?
Good question. And it can be both. Most of the time, what I'm talking about though, are the times where, and I will know it because I'll just be sitting in the exam room with the family and the kiddo's cheeks will be red and their ears will be red. So it can be something that you notice many times throughout the day, but it might not be absolute continuous, but it is also the kids. You know how these little kids, we see these little cute cherub red cheeks, but that's not really what our coloring should be. You know, it should be just normal skin tone. So sometimes you will have those kids that just always have that reddish. And people might say, oh, I have rosacea, or they'll give it a label, and it's when it's a little, it's just more red than what the normal skin tone would be. And you can also have the times where it comes and goes. And it, like when you go outside and you get red cheeks and it's cold out, that's not what we're talking about. This will be, and when you ask a parent, they will know, and they will say, yes, I notice that all the time, and they may not have put the pieces together, but once I start to ask them about it, then they will know. And it is often coupled with those behavior and mood challenges.
Okay. And as far as why histamines, well, I guess, hold on, I'm going to ask a question before this, just so that people who are new to this will understand, where would histamines be coming into play? Like, what would be triggering? Is it that they're exposed to histamines, or is their body making more histamines? Like, what are the triggers here that parents should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, absolutely. So it can be the normal thing. So environmental allergies, you know, which we have the outdoor things, trees, grasses, pollens of all of those things. Then we have the indoor allergens. And then we have foods. And so foods, there's also that difference between, you can have an anaphylactic food allergy to peanut, to shrimp, you know, to certain things. But then we also have this category of foods that are high histamine, and they can be things that are healthy. So I'm going to kind of read the list. So it can be cheese, especially aged cheeses, yogurts and fermented foods like sauerkraut, beer, cured meats, strawberries, cherries, spinach, avocado, eggplant, dried fruit, vinegar. So they're things that can be very, very healthy. But if you notice that your child eats those and then they get a reaction, that's where we want to be watching for those. There's another category of foods that can actually release histamines, and that can be alcohol, bananas, chocolate, cow's milk, nuts, pineapple, shellfish, strawberries, tomatoes, wheat germ. But the thing I want to say to people is, Jen, the way that we were talking about before the show is, My recommendation is not that you have to go cut out all of these foods. Is we really have to be discerning and do some investigation, because these may be part of the puzzle, but typically there can be an underlying driver, meaning you may have some abnormalities in the gut flora, because a lot of the kids that I see in particular, they have been on a lot of antibiotics. They have maybe been on a lot of steroids. So their gut bacteria can have been thrown off. And when we have, maybe we have some yeast overgrowth or some other things that we have found in the stool study, and that can be part of the underlying driver. You could even have a parasite. So if we don't go and address those underlying issues, we will end up taking a whole lot of food out of the diet. We may not see the big result that we want to see.
It's almost like playing whack-a-mole, so to speak.
Yes, you just start taking everything. And one of the things I talk to families about a lot in the practices, my goal is not to take out a whole bunch of food from your child's diet. Yes, we may have to take some things out at first, but the goal is to take the foods that we need to heal the gut so that then we can reintroduce those foods. You know, because we need a wide variety of foods, we get different nutrients from different foods. And I see a lot of families who have taken so many foods out, but the kids are still struggling. So those are the cases too, where we go, okay, could this be an issue of excess histamine? And let's figure out other triggers.
Okay.
I do want to say one other thing about triggers, because mold can be another big trigger. And especially where, you know, I live in the South and we're in the summertime, right? We live in, it's 70 degrees in our homes and it's 90, 100 degrees outside. So there's condensation, there's humidity. When you have moisture, that's where mold can grow. And the mold I'm talking about, it's not the regular environmental allergy mold. It is the kind of mold that grows in a water damaged building. And that can also be a big trigger. And we have found that also I would love you parents to have a heightened awareness of that. If you're doing so many things and your child is still struggling, whether it's eczema or asthma or, you know, any one of those inflammatory conditions.
And so with that said, I guess, so let's say, for example, a parent comes in, they've got, you know, little Susie, she's got bright red cheeks, bright red ears. She's super itchy and has a lot of like asthma-like symptoms, you know, uncontrollable outbursts. Where do you begin? Where do you think the best place to start evaluating where she is? Just so parents could, before maybe if they're interested, especially too, in coming to see you in your practice, the things that they could start to think about ahead of time and start to lay out a plan for themselves. Like, okay, here's what the information we know we've got to start thinking about.
Yes, such a good question. So I will just assume a blank slate that the family has not done anything yet. So the very first thing, what I always do is try to get the kids as comfortable as we can while we start working on the gut issues. So, you know, before we do all that, I will get blood work and we will do a stool study. I use a company called GI Maps, and then I will do something called a urine organic acid test. So that's how I start to evaluate the microbiome or the bacteria in the gut. And then what I would do first with that child is I would put them on an antihistamine, and I will often just use plain old over-the-counter antihistamines so that we can see how much of a role, if any, histamine is playing.
So it's like a test almost.
It's a test. And we do it for a week. And I will, if it's really bad, I'll just do an over-the-counter. Zyrtec makes a dye-free that doesn't have too much stuff in it. So we'll do that in the morning. And then if needed, we'll do Benadryl in the evening. We do that for a week. You watch behavior, you watch skin. If we find an improvement in my practice, then I will use a prescription antihistamine called Ketotifen. And it's an old, old antihistamine, and it helps to bring the histamine levels down in the gut specifically. Because what happens, we have a natural enzyme in our body called the DAO enzyme, and that breaks histamine down. But Benadryl over the long term starts to decrease the activity of the DAO enzyme. So that's why my goal is to get them on the ketotifen so that we can get this these things under control as quickly as we can so that we don't need to use those other antihistamines for too long of a period of time. But I'm also very, to me, it's more important for a child to be sleeping and maybe having a little, you know, we'll deal with the consequences of other medications if we need to get the child comfortable in sleeping, because it's, that's also when their immune system is going to be doing its job and they're going to be doing their healing and the whole family. You know, if the child's not sleeping, mom and dad aren't sleeping.
True, true. And I actually want to ask you a little bit further, just your thoughts on Benadryl use in general long term, because I find that when you talk to people, they've a lot of people rely on Benadryl for a long time.
Yes.
And it's my understanding from doing some reading that it can have some negative consequences. It's not like you just mentioned that it reduces DAO in the GI tract. Are there any other things that people, just in general, because I mean, obviously there are a lot of parents that listen to this, but people even searching for themselves, and obviously they're not kids, but any thoughts on why Benadryl might not be an optimal thing to lean on long term?
Yeah. So there's the first issue that if you're needing to use Benadryl, there's something going on that's uncontrolled. So we need to figure out what that is. Even if you have allergies, Benadryl is not the best option on a daily basis. You know, we have a lot of other newer antihistamines that don't cause, so Benadryl causes sedation. In some kids, it actually can cause hyperactivity. So some families can't even use Benadryl with the kids. And it has, it doesn't, people will also use it to fall asleep, but in reality, it doesn't allow us the proper full sleep cycle. So Benadryl is definitely not my first go-to to help sleep once we have figured out, you know, with the itching and all that kind of thing. So there are, and it has more impacts on the central nervous system than do the newer generation antihistamines. And there are also, and I wanted to start off because I know a lot of your listeners will start doing these things on their own and they may not have an integrated pediatrician to prescribe ketotifen. So there are also so many natural things that we can use. Once we do that trial and we know histamine is the issue, then we can back out and say, okay, we've got quercetin, stinging nettle, vitamin C. I'll give you the names of a few products that I use in the kids to make it easier for families. But there are a lot of natural things that we can use to start to control histamines so that we don't have to rely on Benadryl over the long term.
Mm-hmm. And are there any particular, you mentioned like the GI map and an organic acid test, which we've talked about on the show before. Are there any particular blood labs that you find to be particularly helpful? Like maybe a mom could possibly get their doctor to run something.
Yes. So I start with a complete blood count. I typically will do something called an iron binding package, because if you have a lot of excess histamine, then your body probably isn't absorbing iron as effectively and efficiently as you could be. And I'm getting into a lot of detail here, but what happens with iron is it will go to feed the not so good bacteria in the gut and we won't be utilizing it. So I have a lot of kids that their hemoglobin is totally normal. So they're not anemic, but their iron levels are low, their iron saturation, their total iron. And that can absolutely impact sleep. It can impact ability to pay attention. You know, sometimes those kids will have those big red, dark circles under their eyes. So anyway, so I do an iron binding package, a ferritin. I typically will do a vitamin B12 and a B6. And I do a vitamin D panel. So I do, it's called a 125 hydroxy vitamin D, a 25 hydroxy vitamin D, and I do a celiac panel if the children are still eating gluten on everybody. And then you can also an environmental allergy panel if that has not been done, and that's an IgE protein. I typically don't do much food allergy testing. It's just the way to do food allergy testing is if you have a reaction, you should test that food. And what we have now are we have a big panel. So then sometimes we get these results that we have to figure out what to do with. So there's IgE testing, there's IgG food testing. That would be, I'm sure you have delved into that in the show. So I won't go into that right now. But then you can also do a whole blood histamine. And because when I'm starting to work with kids, there's so much blood that I want to get, I usually don't get a whole blood histamine because I go by history. And it's so anyway, but you can get that. And I think LabCorp is one of the places that you can get the whole blood histamine done. And then if I have any concerns about mold, a toxic mold type of exposure, I will do something called a human transforming growth factor beta 1, just in it. TGF beta 1 for short. And LabCorp is one of the few labs that will still do that. And again, that's just a screening lab. But if that's elevated, that gives me a heightened awareness to say, okay, I might need to start looking for mold in that patient. You can still have mold exposure with the normal TGF beta.
And so so we've done the test, you've done all of these labs, we're waiting for results. I think it's important to mention that some gut bugs can produce histamines.
Absolutely.
So let's say you get a stool test back, and what are you looking for? I assume you look for bugs that produce histamines, and then you have to address them, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So the stool test, they look at the good bacteria, the moderate, the bad. They look for yeast overgrowth. It looks for inflammatory markers. It looks, is the child digesting and absorbing their fats? It looks for blood. And so most of the time we will see, there might be Pseudomonas. There might be, an excess of E. coli or not enough E. coli, there might be parasites, but I always start one thing at a time and I do it for 5 days before starting the next thing. But I talk about digestion. We have to have proper digestion and motility of the GI tract. So we start with a probiotic and this is all, I have an online course, which we have talked about.
Yeah.
I walk parents through exactly in my online course what I do in the practice so that you could even, again, if you live elsewhere and you don't have access to a pediatrician, you maybe don't want to come to North Carolina, you can get these things started. So we start with this probiotic. The second thing I do is a digestive enzyme. The third thing are the omega-3 fats. So I don't ever start a fat, either a fish oil on a child until I have those digestive enzymes on board. Because if you have a compromised gut, if we're spending, some of these supplements are expensive, is I want to make sure that that child is digesting and absorbing those supplements. So then we move on, and I use a lot of something called phosphatidylcholine, which is what you get inside egg yolk. You also get it in meat, but those omega-3 fats, that phosphatidylcholine, we're focusing on the cell wall. So if we have, so mast cells are the things that hold histamine. Histamine lives inside these mast cells. We want to have as stable a cell wall on those mast cells as we can. So that's wherever, we talk about that bigger picture, but I don't necessarily go attack individual gut bugs because I've seen a lot of families who they'll get, maybe they'll get a stool study from a practitioner and then they're put on either an antibiotic or a strong herb to kill that certain bacteria. But I take it several steps before that because you've got to have proper GI function or those gut bugs are going to come right back.
Absolutely. And just out of curiosity, are you able with kids, and I'm asking because I don't know because I don't have children, I don't work with children, stomach acid is important. Is it possible to, especially with kids? Well, I mean, even me, I can't swallow pills. So I'm like a big kid. But with little kids, if they don't have enough stomach acid, is there a way to help support them? Or that's not really the initial, that's not necessarily something they need to concern themselves, or the parent doesn't need to concern themselves with right now, especially if they can't swallow pills.
Yes. No, we absolutely, we think a ton about stomach acid, because also a lot of our kids, we test for Helicobacter pylori, which is a bacteria that can cause ulcers. It lives up in the stomach. And if we, because a lot of times we suspect the kids have H. pylori, even though they didn't test positive for it, and that decreases your stomach acid. And if we don't have enough stomach acid, we can't digest and absorb things, and that is going to throw off the rest of the bacteria in the gut. So it's that's why we do it very slowly. And that's why we start with this probiotic, then the digestive enzymes. And if they're, before we do that though, if the child has either constipation or a lot of bloating, we go very slowly until we start to see those things beginning to resolve. So you can't, and I, because I have kids, you know, I also see kids on the autism spectrum. I have kids that will eat five things. Somehow we figure out how to do it. You know, we are probiotic. They open up, they mix it with something. With the digestive enzymes, we have it in powder. We have it chewable. We have capsule. And they're very, I have an integrative pharmacist on our team who's amazing, Deborah Allen. And she has done a tremendous amount of research on the supplements that we use. So they're very clean. And even like with our enzymes, the chewable and the powder has flaxseed in it. So if they can't do that, we open up the capsule. And, you know, even with the little ones, moms will just rub it on their gums or put it with something. So we work.
You meet them where you are.
Yes.
Yeah. Meet them where they are. That's it.
And even with phosphatidylcholine and fish oil. So we use a really yummy tasting fish oil, and then we mix the phosphatidylcholine in with it because it's like blackstrap molasses consistency, and it doesn't taste great, but somehow these, you know, we've figured out
make it happen.
System to get this stuff in the kids.
Yeah. And can I ask you a question too? You know, if parents are listening to this and they're like, oh my goodness, this sounds like this is my kid. Like, I think I actually need to shift gears here. Is this mostly, or maybe you could give us a percentage here of like, a lot of times parents, especially if it's rash oriented, they're an itching.
Yeah.
We're mostly focused on like, what can I put on my skin to get it to stop? And so a lot of like external applications of things. If someone's listening to this and they're saying, this sounds like my kid, I really need to investigate this. What would the percentage be of like the work that has to be done internally versus what you could do externally as far as like a salve or a cream or something like that?
So I have always, just from clinical experience, and I wish I had stats on this, but I think it's about 60 to 70% of kids will respond to the normal things, to some of the external and a little bit. When I say the normal things, the integrative or the functional medicine things, where you figure out which are the big triggers for the child's skin issues. But at the same time, I always am working on the gut. So even if you're getting the skin resolved and maybe you have found sort of the magic combo that works topically, I would, at the least, I would do the probiotics and the digestive enzymes to make sure that we have good gut function, especially if you have a child. And if you're spending money on organic food that's really clean and good food, you want to make sure that they're digesting and absorbing that food. So, and that can be, and that's the beauty of kids is there, many of the kids, their systems will correct themselves. But if you are that other, I would say it's like 30-ish percent that need a little bit more, then we want to work on the gut while we're working on the skin. And it's, let me just do that quick review of my three big things that I think get missed with the skin, with eczema, or with itchiness in conventional medicine. So it's looking at food. So we know that anywhere from a third of to two-thirds of eczema is triggered by a food allergy or a food sensitivity. You know, dairy and eggs being the two big culprits, but it can be many other things. The second thing is the bacteria on the skin, especially staph, can trigger a toxin. It releases a toxin. And if we don't address that, it can continuously be triggered. And then it's just the barrier, you know, having the right moisturizer, because if we don't address that barrier, because some people want to do it all naturally and only internally, but we need to, because there's newer research that shows that when the skin is not intact, that can actually trigger that leaky gut and the stomach issue. So we always want to address that side of it. So to me, it's always a two part, even if it's pretty mild, we just want to make sure that we're setting the kids up so that once you stop, if you have to be on a steroid for a little while, that once you stop it, you're able to stay off of it.
Yeah. And just one last question. For a parent that does go down this route, I like to manage people's expectations. I think that's important. So what kind of time frame should they be? I mean, you're saying like every 5 days. So this is not going to be a fast process. It's not like I'm going to take one thing and poof, Johnny is better. That's not going to be what this is like. So more or less, what should a parent like, how far in advance should they be thinking, like, this time frame is probably going to be 6 months, 8 months, a year? Like, what does the journey generally look like?
It's typically a 6 to 12 month process. And I always talk through parents. It's usually two or three steps forward, one or two back, two or three forward, one or two back. It is almost never a straight downhill. And that's such a good, I love that question. That's why at my practice, I do a year long membership, because and sometimes we can be a few months into it and then we figure out something comes out of left field and we say, oh my gosh, okay, now we need to address this, but also things come in layers. And so you get certain things addressed and then the body kind of says, okay, now this is the next thing that we need to take care of.
Yeah. And so you have a really great book that's coming out. I just want to make sure that people know that too, especially if they're listening to this and they're like, this really sounds like my child. I want to look more into this, especially if they don't live in the area where you are and they're looking for some immediate steps. And so the book is Healthy Kids, Happy Moms, which I love because when kids are healthy, mom is happy.
Yes, exactly.
As you said, when the children don't sleep, neither do the parents. No one is happy. So tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write this book.
Yeah. So years and years ago, the first case was a kiddo with eczema. And it was, you know, the mom came in and he had recurring ear infections and eczema. And the mom came in like he was 8 or 9 months. And she said, you know, I went off of dairy. She was breastfeeding and I took Johnny off of dairy and his eczema is almost completely gone. And I was like, that was absolutely foreign to me at that time. And this was probably 2006. And I said, stay off of it. And I will figure out how we're going to get fat and vitamin D and calcium into both of you. And so that, you know, so he was doing good, but still had some eczema and still he had some fluid in his ear. So at his, right before his 1 year well visit, this is a long story, sorry. But she had a big omelet. So a bunch of eggs, he had a huge flare up. So we said, okay, it's dairy and eggs. And which is kind of what the text, you know, this is what the research shows us. So anyway, we pulled the eggs and dairy out, the fluid in his ears cleared up and his eczema totally went away. So I just paid attention to that. And that was, you know, it was years and years of seeing that. And I finally said, I need to write this process down because most people see adults and they don't know how to translate this into kids. So that's where the book, walks through my process, and so does my online course.
That's perfect. And so what we'll do is we're going to link to the book. We're going to link to the course, which I know that some in our community have taken advantage of and enjoyed. And you also have a really great handout. Tell us a little bit about the handout.
Yes.
It's free for everybody to go download.
Yes. And it's called our Dr. Kilbane's foundational supplements. And it just walks you through, and I have dosing by different ages, and it's always, always, always talk to your doctor before you start any of these things. But these are just, it's a guide that you can use for the things that I've been talking about.
Perfect. I think that's great that people can have access to that. And they can also find you at SheilaKilbane.com. You've got a lot of resources there and you're also on social media. So we'll link to all of that. That way it makes it super easy for everybody to find you and connect with you. And I'd highly recommend you guys all grab a copy of Dr. Kilbane's book. Thank you so much for joining us. I can't wait to have you come back. We've got some great other talks in the works that we are working on. Dr. Kilbane is full of knowledge, and I really appreciate you being here.
Oh my gosh, I always love talking to you, and we have to make sure that we stop and actually record, or we just keep talking.
That's true.
I love what you do.
I really hope that for all my parents out there listening, this episode was very enlightening. All of the resources and links and everything that we've discussed is over at skinterrupt.com/189. You can head there, check out all the resources, and if you want to leave a question or comment, that's the place to do so. And if you know any parents who are really struggling with their kids and they suspect this histamine overload picture, which you guys are hearing me talk about on other episodes, and now you've heard Dr. Kilbane talk about it as well, no matter your relationship with those particular individuals, I'd highly recommend sharing this episode with them so that way they can also get access to these tools and resources as well. And in addition to leaving comments and questions or sharing, you guys know that it means a lot if you leave a review. So make a point, if you haven't done so yet, rate and review The Healthy Skin Show on your podcast platform, and then hit the subscribe button. That way you don't miss any of the research, the tips, the inspiration, and the hope that we are sharing every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.